jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the second preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2019. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. Good to be back discussing some forwards this week.
I've spent a bit more time looking at Supercoach and doing a bit more research. So I feel more prepared than I was last week, and I'll need to be because the forwards are going to be a little bit more tricky than the midfielders to discuss.
Yeah, there's still plenty of options, though.
Certainly are, but I think the sixth most in the forward line last year averaged 98, and then the drop-off after that sort of the 95 mark. So you really want to get it right because there's not sort of the same depth of high-scoring players as there is in the midfield where you've got a few more options that can average or have the potential to average 110 in patches.
I think the turnover is also huge as well. I would say that only two of the top six would be there at the end of the year.
Yeah, a position that we often like to pick mid-prices in for that reason as well, so that it gives us a little bit more flexibility in terms of trading to the top six that will be there by the end of the season. But of course, you don't need to pick a player that has averaged in the top six across the entirety of the season. As long as you pick them up for a hot patch, oftentimes that's sort of enough. And so sometimes key position forwards for the second half of the year, if you get them in a hot patch, that can do. Or somebody moving from the forward line to the midfield to make up for an injury elsewhere on ground can also be a pretty good option on the run home. So it's a trickier position than the midfield. But of course, as you said, Mark, pre-seasons, blue sky thinking, and I'm sure plenty of options to tempt us into this show.
My specialty seems to be picking them as they're about to go into a quiet patch or about to get injured.
Well, let's hope that's not the case for this particular episode, right? Before we get into the show, I just want to plug our Patreon community again. Since we posted the show last week, we had about 20 or so new patrons sign up for the season. So Woo. A huge shout out. Yeah, and thank you to that community and everybody who's dipped into their pocket to support us. I will just sort of briefly highlight a couple of new extra things that we're doing on Patreon this year. And one of those is a group prize. So we set up a Super Coach Patrons group every year. And this year, as a little thank you and a little bit of incentive for those who have signed up to the community, we'll put away a portion of the donations from the patrons for the group prize. So at this stage, we're thinking $250, a Super Coach cap, and a couple of stubby holders. So if you're thinking of joining, that's a little bit of an extra to say thanks, and you'll put yourself into the running for our group prize. Mark, that sounds good, doesn't it?
Sounds awesome, as a bonus to the $50K that one of the Patreons will win this year.
And we've got another little extra as well, and that's a private Discord channel. So I'm not too sure how many of you be using Discord out there. I certainly feel old learning about something like Discord. It was originally built for gamers, but it's essentially a chat app. So a message board, essentially, but it allows us to chat a bit more live, a bit more real time than we otherwise would on the forum. So we're still expecting forum to be sort of the main point of engagement and the main source of discussion for the Supercoach Coach community. But for those who are looking to have some game day bants or potentially useful during the lockout period after team sheets have been announced, it's a good place to go in and be able to chat live with others in the Supercoach Coach community. So if you sign up for our second tier, so $2 a show, you'll get access to our private forum and private Discord so that you can talk Supercoach strategy behind closed doors with other patrons. So just a little bit of an extra that we're trying out. Mark, you've hopped on Discord a couple of times. We do have, of course, a public Supercoach Coach channel there as well. How have you found it so far, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. You're making me feel old by using the word bants, though.
All right. That's enough bants for now, Mark. Let's get into the show. How we're going to tackle the show is, again, run through a whole host of players, and we'll evaluate players on that rating system we developed last week, Mark. So a trap, a player that we would not consider selecting and we think would be a bad selection to start off with in 2019. A low player, so it's not low as in they're not a good pick, but low as in they're low in our consideration set, but we're actually actively considering them. They could potentially make our team, but you might want to wait and see until some preseason games have gone. You can see how they've progressed over the off season. You've got medium, the players that you're actively considering and reasonably confident that you might start. Then you've got the players who are rated high, so you're very likely to start them. Happy with that, Mark?
Very happy, mate. Ready to go.
All right, let's start as we did last week with the top six in the position. So we'll look at the top six forwards from 2018. And as you already mentioned, Mark, low percentage of these players end up making it back into the top six by the end of the season. So I wonder sort of how aggressive we're going to be in ruling some of these out for top six this year. But we'll start off with a guy who's probably straight up just locked in our forward line. That's Patrick Dangerfield. He spent 37% of his time up forward last year, which is the highest it's been in a very long time, probably since his first couple of years in the league. This year, we expect him to go back into the midfield with Gary Ablett moving up forward. And also, Dangerfield was dealing with a sore back last year that seemed to be hindering him even well into the season. So I'm excited to have him in the forward line. It seems like a bit of a gift there, Mark.
Very much a gift. I'm surprised, even though they've got a percentage of about how much time he's been forward, that they've actually allowed this to get through. I know that there's been a few in the past that they've kept as midfield only, like Ablett, even though he kicked 50 one year. And Dangerfield does seem like a bit of a gift and the lockiest of locks. And hopefully he can return to perma-captain sort of scoring as well.
All right, the next bloke you've already mentioned, Mark, and that is Tommy Hawkins. I think it's a fairly large surprise that he ended up in the top couple average forwards for the year. If I'd known that, that would have been giving me a great excuse to pick a Geelong forward in my team. He did buck the trend, though, being the only probably true key position forward to make it in the top six. The other one is Buddy Franklin, who we'll get to in a bit. But as we know, he spends a bit of time in the midfield. Do you think this one was sort of a bit of a one-hit wonder, Mark?
There's a little bit of luck involved with premium forwards because they're so reliant on their big scores. Hawkins had six scores over 120 last year. And can he continue to do that? I'm not sure. I think that he looked super fit in the AFLX. Not that that's a super guide, but there does seem to be a few reasons why you might actually pick Hawkins again, which is, it's a really weird thing to say, actually, because, I mean, he's had like 10 or 11 years in the AFL. He's only averaged over 100 once, and it was only just over 100. So you would think that he's fully priced. Look, I think that there are actually some reasons to pick him, and I can understand why some people might go there. What do you reckon?
He seems like one of those guys, to your point before, Mark, that might drop out of that top six. There's sometimes he just gets shut out of games, and I think I looked at Hawkins at the start of the season. I thought Geelong doesn't really have a foil to Tomahawk, and so he can get ganged up on a little bit as well. Look, I don't detest the selection, but as a starting pick, it just seems too risky. So he'd be a trap for me, sadly, as a Geelong supporter. I don't think I'd start with him. Next bloke, Justin Westhoff. He spent his time split up all over the ground last year, finished with an average of 101.2. He's a guy that's kept up a pretty good average for a few years now, but this is certainly one of his career best. Yeah. I think his next best is 99 way back in 2013, and then sort of a 95 in 2015.
He is a trap for me just because they've brought Lysette in, and I think Lysette and Ryder would be taking the bulk of the ruckload there. And so Westhoff was sort of played some extra roles because of injury last year. Awesome player, will probably have a good season, but I think he's just too much of a trap at that price.
Agree, trap for me. I think in general, we don't like selecting players who are at the top of their trend line, especially when they're the age of Westhoff or Hawkins for that matter. The next bloke, Buddy Franklin, he's under some injury cloud at the moment as well, has had groin surgery that he's slowly getting back from. Might not even start the season, but if he does, I still think he's too risky to start off. Buddy normally pretty reliably drops to about 400K at some point of the season, even though he has improved his basement over time. A trap for me at this stage.
Yeah, I think that given his preseason, he's almost impossible to pick, but he's still scored really well despite not even training in the past. He's an absolute freak. It's hard to completely write him off, but also too risky to pick in my eyes.
All right, the next bloke, Sam Menegola. He is a guy who has been a picture of consistency. I've questioned his ability to stay scoring this well since he's joined the league because he kind of went from zero to hero pretty quickly in the forward line. But this is 2 years now back-to-back finishing in the top six forwards, which is pretty impressive. Yeah. Mark, Are you concerned at all about the midfield mix, what Ablett, Kelly, Dangerfield, how that's Duncan. All going to play out? Or would you be Duncan, or are you reasonably confident that because he's done it for 3 years, he might be able to do it again?
Yeah, he keeps surprising me. Not a very sexy pick, I don't think. And I've always stayed away because of the reasons that you mentioned, like Hawkins, Selwood, Ablett, Danger, Duncan. Can they have like a fifth player scoring premium numbers there? I'm not sure that they can. But yet he keeps proving me wrong. So he is trapped for me. Not in consideration at all for my team, but I can totally understand why other people are picking him. He's at the right age. He's 26 years old. It's really hard to recommend against him. He's just not someone that I would be picking.
I probably rate him a little bit higher. I think he's a medium for me. Actively considering him, he did finish the year last year with 6 tons to really put the icing on the cake there. And something that's reasonably impressive about Menegola that not everyone sees is his ability to take the forward marks. So he plays quite well as a third tall and taking the mark at sort of the height of the ball. So he's really surprisingly good for a medium forward midfielder at taking those marks and converting from them. So probably the downside we haven't mentioned is he has had some knee soreness throughout the preseason. So, or he's been coming back from some sort of knee cleanup. So he hasn't had the complete sort of picture of health heading into the season, which would be another reason sort of to downgrade him slightly. But he's a medium for me.
Yeah.
The next bloke, Devon Smith, Mark, averaged 97.9 for the season last year. It's very tempting to go back to the well, isn't it, Mark, when you've had previous success with a player? And I can see a lot of Supercoach players going back to the well with Devon Smith. What do you think about him?
Tricky. Probably a medium for me, mate. If it wasn't for the bicep injury, he would probably be a high. Did pick up a bicep injury a few weeks ago. They say he's on track for round one still, but they can be pretty hard to overcome completely, given that he relies so much on tackling and his intensive pressure around the ball. And we're a little bit unsure about how maybe Dylan Shear will affect him, how the rise of Parrish and McGrath heading into the midfield will affect him. I think that there's enough concerns for me that he probably won't make my final squad, but there's still also plenty of good reasons to pick him. Had a super year last year, came home really strong and won Essendon's Best and Fairest.
He's probably a low to a trap for me. I don't think I'm going to start him. He's probably not a trap, as in I don't see him really burning you, but I just don't see a huge amount of upside in his game, especially with Shield coming on board as well and a couple of their young blokes pushing into the midfield. McGrath would be a candidate for that. So not for me. Next bloke is a guy who a lot of people would be considering a lock alongside Dangerfield. I've had a lot of people say, we know what the first two forwards are for Supercoach 2019. Isaac Heaney is almost locked into the second forward position there. Yeah. He averaged 97.5 last year, but he actually had a game where he got, I think, knocked out or concussed or something like that against Richmond in round 15, and he didn't come back on after that. So he played 44 minutes in that game for only 18 Supercoach points. You take that game out, his average actually jumps to 101.5, and he'd be ranked the fourth overall.
I think that his basement is not much lower than what he's priced, and his ceiling is significantly higher. He's in his fifth year. He could be the best player in the AFL. I guess that there's some concerns that maybe with Franklin maybe missing some games, he might get thrown down forward or not be exclusively as a midfielder. But I think he'll kick goals, and he's just such a gun that the lockiest of locks for me.
Agreed. All right, let's move on to a whole patch of injured players now. These are guys that have either had niggles or are going through niggles right now, but are, you know, potential candidates to be in the top six. We're approaching this with sort of a slightly more skeptical view, Mark, because we love picking players that have had cleanest of preseasons and are raring to go. And generally, a niggle, no matter how small, if it takes you out of training for a couple of weeks, can really impact your ability to dominate from the get-go. So we'll start off with Tom McDonald, who was pulled out of the AFLX pretty recently. He had patellar tendonitis, which is when your tendon is slightly inflamed and causing you pain. It is just a short-term injury. Last year, he did really surprise a lot of people with how well he was playing up forward and the level of consistency brought to the game. average 98 for the season last year. His career best from a Supercoach point of view, besting even when he was, you know, that dominant center half back, averaging 96 in 2015.
Yeah. I don't think that he's a trap. He's not someone that I'm really likely to start, but it'll be interesting to see how someone like him benefits from the new rules. Jesse Hogan's not going to be there, so it'll be interesting to see whether that's actually a positive or a negative for him. So there's some reasons to pick him. Melbourne, you would expect, would be top four this year. And he definitely surprised me last year with his ability to just continually take contested marks up forward and kick goals. And yeah, I definitely, another one that I'd be hesitant to recommend against, because I think if you think that he's going to be a good pick, then I'd back you in to do that, but not someone that I'm really likely to start.
Just something to remember, he played as a key position forward, and so very, very much relied on the big games to score those points. His 164, 135 really lifted up his average, but I think he only had about 7 tons for the year. Traditionally, we like picking people who are a little bit more reliable than that rather than relying on the big scoring points.
Yeah, I think that what he did last year, what he showed, is that he can avoid the real small scores pretty well, which is sort of what you need from these key forwards as well. That's the other side of that coin.
Yeah, he had only 2 scores under 80, being a 74, and his poorest score being a 39. But that's actually pretty good for a key position forward, that sort of buddy territory when they only have 1 poor score under that 60 mark. Next bloke, Robbie Gray. He's another guy that if you take out the game where he got either knocked out or something like that, I think it was in round 17, he only played 46 minutes. His average jumps right up to 99.8, and it puts him at the 7th highest averaging forward for the year. Had the 3rd most centre bounce attendances for Port Adelaide last year, and with Ollie Wines being out for the first half of the year bodes well for his ability to score, because he really scores much better in the midfield than in the forward line, and they like pushing him up forward when they're rich in the midfield. He was pulled out of the JLT though, Mark, with a bit of knee soreness, but it doesn't sound too serious.
Yeah, I think he scored 6 tons in his first 7 games last year and then scored only 4 after that. So I think his ability to get through a season on the field is getting better, but whether he can get through it completely fit is a bit tricky. Hard to write off a complete superstar of the game. Another player that's pretty unlikely to make my side, but has a fair bit of upside in him.
Yeah, I don't consider him a trap, but probably a wait-and-see sort of low for me on Robbie Gray. Next bloke, former teammate of Gray's, now off to Hawthorn. Chad Wingard has had that calf complaint in the last couple of years, moved to a close to 50-50 split of the midfield and forward line, which is definitely what we want to be seeing from Chad Wingard.
One of your favourites.
Yeah, and at Hawthorn, he should continue to get more time in the midfield, and that's what his teammates and his coach has been saying so far. But it's hard to pick a bloke that's had a calf injury. Like Robbie and Tom, they've had knee soreness, but it's not something that's an actual sort of strain or injury. It's just their body's not handling the training load, whereas a calf is an actual breakdown of a muscle, which isn't great. It means you have to stop rather than slow down. I'm not too confident on starting Chad. A low for me, pretty close to a trap, though. I don't really see myself starting with him.
I think you're pretty good at analyzing Chad, so I'll take your advice on that one. I think that injury-free, great preseason, he would be very strongly considered in every team.
Yeah, especially the way he ran home last year. The first half of the year was an absolute turd. He had 1 ton, but he finished the second half of the year, I think, with 8 out of 11 tons on the run home, and the other 4 being, you know, in the 80s or 90s. So it was a very good finish for Chad last year. Now, next bloke, one of your favorites, mate, Jordan Dugowie.
Yeah.
He's had a bit of a... They've not really described too much what's going on. It was a bit of an ankle, and then they're saying mid-foot sprain. It's a bit sort of undisclosed how long exactly he'll be out for. I hear that could potentially miss round one, but he's also a decent chance to get back before then. I'm not too sure. What have you heard on Jordan?
Just recovering quicker than expected. So that's a good sign. I think that he's probably a bit of a trap given that he's had missed some preseason. I think that with someone like, if you're looking for them to break out, they need to have had the perfect preseason. Also with Collingwood, they've just got so many mids now, it's going to be hard for him to get like a, because he's so good as a forward, it's going to be hard for him to really get that mid rotation that he needs. So sort of more going to play a Toby Green sort of role where he could be a gun mid in any other team, but he's so good at the forward as well that he'll probably play a lot up there. And Toby's done really well in the past and averaged enough to be a premium forward. So wouldn't surprise me if Jordan does it at some stage. Again, the perfect preseason is what I'd want before picking him. And to be honest, before he did the foot, he was actually in my team.
He was the 17th most used forward target last year. And that's pretty massive when you consider that sort of game style got Collingwood pretty deep into the final series. So he's so good at winning one-on-ones or at least retaining the ball in his area that until they get a suitable replacement for him up forward, and like you said, Mark, with the congestion in the midfield, I wouldn't be really looking to start him even if he was injury-free. So a trap for me. Yep. Tom Lynch, he's moved over to Richmond now, but he's recovered from that knee injury pretty slowly. There's a chance he might not even play round one. So based off that, and as a key position forward, I'd say a trap or a no.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's a bit of a shame because I actually think that if he was fully fit and looking at sort of second rucking for Richmond and playing key forward, I think he could be a really good pick. But just that injury makes it probably too difficult to pick him.
Another key position forward with an injury is Josh Kennedy. He came back from a shoulder surgery, but then in the preseason has had some sort of leg soreness issue. So it doesn't seem to be his shoulder that's causing him issues, but the loading back on his running. Kennedy last year obviously had an injury-affected season, and so he presents a fair bit of value at his average. With an injury concern, obviously, you're a lot less likely to start him. But have you been tempted at all? No.
Again, it's the injury thing. So I guess it's just because we're discussing injured players. But I think at 400,000, he may be a big beneficiary of the new rules. So I would be very interested if he had had a great preseason. Has averaged premium numbers before. Again, reliant on those really big scores. But yeah, probably a trap at this stage. It's the only reason I'd be interested is the value at his price.
Next player, Toby Green, another injured player recovering from his ankle surgery last year, struggled to string any games together. He only averages in the low 90s anyway, even when injury free. So he's the sort of bloke that you'd want to pick if you saw him moving up into the high 90s. And to do that, you want a clean preseason. So he's a trap for me at this stage.
353,000 or whatever he is. He was definitely in my first team until I sort of heard that he'd been struggling about over the preseason. I think if you could get mid 90s for 350,000, you're doing really, really well. It's just, again, that he doesn't seem to have recovered fully from that injury. So, and his ability to play 22 games is suspect.
All right, we'll move on to a set of questions from our patrons now. We got pretty much the same question, both from Richard Callis and Jeff Lane, both saying Danger and Heaney appear to be locks this year, but after that, they're struggling to find an F3. Richard identified Smith, Menegola, and Wingard, and Jeff identified Smith, Menegola, and Tim Kelly. Mark, before we get into sort of the other players to discuss, who have you got after the Heaney Dangerfield comment?
I have a player in complete flux. It's changed three times today. Sort of looking at maybe going one of those cheaper guys, to be honest. So a bit of a breakout contender from the 400,000. So maybe Jack Billings or Jack Darling or a player like that.
I think if injury-free, a lot of the options would look good, but Smith, Menegola, and Wingard have all had some sort of injury niggle over the course of the preseason, which is a little bit unfortunate. Yeah. Now that you've brought up value, Mark, we're going to move into the value section of the show now and try and pick some of these blokes that might push their heads up into that top six category. And we'll start off with a question from one of our patrons, Ben Drines. He's asking about our thoughts on the Dogs trio, Dunkley, McLean, and Wallace. Dunkley and McLean are pretty interesting in that their seasons sort of contrasted each other. Dunkley started slow and then finished with a red-hot bang, and McLean started really, really fast and then finished really slow. And then Wallace was just sort of fine and par for the course. What are your thoughts on that Dog trio, Mark?
I think that the easy answer is to say that there's too many players like that at the Bulldogs, and we don't know which one's going to be the one that comes up, and we're not sure whether they're going to be able to do it for a whole season anyway, because they'll probably change over the season, so just avoid them all. That's the easy answer, but I think that a lot of people are out there are trying to pick, well, no, maybe like one of them will actually step up. And so my bet would be McLean. I like him. I just like his progression over the last few years with scoring, and I think that he showed early in the season that if you can get the role, he does have the ability to average over 100, even though Wallace and Dunkley probably do as well. But if I had to split them, I would go McLean. I can see why there's arguments for the other guys as well, though, and that's why ultimately I'll probably go with the easy answer of not picking any of them. But if I had to, McLean.
I think if I had to, it'd be Dunkley. It worries me that when Dunkley started scoring, McLean stopped. Dunkley's made that permanent move to the midfield in about round 14, and the amount of tackle pressure that he puts on as a midfielder seems like something that's a little bit more attractive to have around the guts than Toby McLean, who is a little bit more light set and is an effective midfielder, but probably more of a link-up player than Dunkley, who can really apply some physical body pressure in an otherwise pretty light Western Bulldogs midfield. They're pretty slight as a whole. I think I'd rather take a bloke who's finishing fast than a bloke who slowed down to the end of the season. But at this stage, I don't have either of them high in my consideration set. They're probably both low. They don't have an exposed history of high scoring, and that makes you nervous.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if Wallace had played 22 games this year that he became the one out of the three to do it, to be the best pick. So that level of uncertainty and the fact that they can all be pretty decent players in the forward line just makes it really hard to pick any of them for me.
At least Dalhouse is out of there, because they just have so many competition for that sort of type of player. I think there's another two or three more names we could rattle off in that sort of vein. All right, let's go to the next player. This is an old stager, but he averaged 96 last year off 22 games, which actually would have been a good result if you started him. And that's David Mundy. What do you reckon, mate? Is 34 too old to make into our Supercoach sides?
Yeah, 33 probably was as well. But I mean, I think that we saw with Cade Simpson a couple of years ago that he had his best season like in his 30s as well. So look, it can happen. And especially for someone like Mundy, who has sort of moved out of the midfield and more into a forward role. With Neil going and Blakely injured and Hill injured as well, maybe they'll rely on Mundy to play some more midfield minutes where he's scored really, really well in the past. For me, 34 is really, really tricky to pick, but I think he's probably a pretty solid pick and someone that would be still reasonably high up my draft order.
The worry was he's going to spend more time up forward, but he actually spent a fair chunk of his time still in the midfield. He did rotate forward, but he was also effective at scoring goals when he did move up forward. I see Mundy not dropping too far off, even if he does drop a little bit. But I could also see some upside potentially in his game with Lachie Neal leaving Frio. That might free up a bit more time back in the center for David Mundy. And the fact that he played 22 games at that age is definitely encouraging. Next bloke, Tim Kelly, averaged 93 last year and now available as a forward. He is a mature age recruit, so there's no reason why he has to hit the sort of the second year blues the same way a lot of other younger blokes do. Is he too risky, though, to pick off no previous history, Mark?
I'm going to rely on your input on this one, mate. I guess similar to what I said about, was it Hawkins or Manigola earlier, that there's just a lot of cats potentially competing for points. Loved his ability to finish games. So like when the game was on the line, Cali was an absolute star last year. And I think potentially has a bigger midfield role available to him this year.
I probably have him as a low, a wait and see. I will be tempted, no doubt, because if he does end up playing midfield, you could still see him improving on a 93. You'd kind of want to see how Geelong's team comes together this year. You'd expect after they crashed out of the finals last year, they're going to make some changes to their midfield mix. They already said they're going to move Ablett back up forward. So I just want to see where exactly Kelly has played and how good the offseason's been for him. If he comes out like a bull at the gates, I anticipate he'll make his way into a fair few teams.
Yep. 505,000, there's still a lot of risks with him. I'm not sure he presents a heap of value. Given the fact that he requested a trade last year and wasn't traded, I'm not sure whether how that's going to play out this year. That could go really, really well for him, or it could go really, really poorly.
Yeah, I'm hoping he does a Ryan O'Keefe, but we'll see. All right, next player, Jack Riewoldt. A lot of people may have forgotten that he had a game where he was knocked out, scored 3 Supercoach points, and that dragged down his overall average if you're looking at it in the Supercoach team picker. Jack Riewoldt actually averaged 97.1 last year, which placed him 10th if you take out those time on ground games underneath 70 minutes.
And he also backed it up with the 35 the following week, which a lot of players do after going off with concussion.
So he's a bloke that does rely on those high-scoring games, and that 10-goal haul certainly helped him. He did score 219 in that single game. Would you consider Jack Riewoldt with Tommy Lynch entering the team, Mark?
I think that Lynch will be fine as far as Riewoldt goes, because Riewoldt is less reliant on goals now for his score because he is just such a selfless player these days. He's a real team player. I'd really like him to be 50,000 cheaper. I think at 504,000, he has to average 95 plus, like over 100 really, which I'm not sure that he necessarily has it in him, because he has never averaged over 100 before. So he'd be asking something he's never done before in 11 years in the AFL. But I still think that, like, potentially if key forwards do benefit this year, then he would be absolutely one of those guys. And his ability to take contested marks and maybe be isolated in the forward line and beat one-on-ones, I think that he's someone that's actually strongly in consideration. I would just a little bit turned off by his price.
My little worry is that he was the second most used forward target last year. I don't know if Lynch coming in means that takes some pressure off the fact that he would have been double teamed a fair bit as a bloke that is taking so much of that attention, or whether or not he'll just get less of the ball coming through him and less scoring opportunities. So I'll wait and see for me as well. But I think a lot of these key position forwards, Mark, especially now that we've passed Franklin and Hawkins, who are fully priced, and we're talking about a few more of these value options, we're going to want to see exactly what the rule changes mean for key position forwards and whether or not it means they get more space. They're able to take more marks inside 50 and convert more goals. Yeah. So a lot of these forwards will be a wait and see for me.
I don't agree with that at all, actually. I think that if you want to win Supercoach, you have to gamble on your opinion on that. Go with it, because it'll give you a head start on the other people in the competition. But if you're going just for a good finish, then maybe not.
I don't mean wait and see as in don't start them and then wait and see what to do, but you'd want to at least see what unfolds in the preseason, I would have thought.
I think that's overrating what actually happens in the preseason. I'm not sure that I put too much emphasis onto the JLT games. I definitely try not to. And often it takes 6 or 7 weeks for teams to work out what others are doing and to adjust to that anyway.
Yeah, I have a slightly different take on it this year because of the rule changes. I'm looking at key position forwards more than I would otherwise, because in previous seasons, I think I would have just drawn a line through most of these blokes. Anyway, on to another key position forward, but this one is more Buddy-like in that he actually plays through the midfield. Yeah. Just saw an article come out this morning. He played the intra-club for Frio, and that's Jesse Hogan. And dominated in the midfield. And Rossi Lyon is looking for Hogan to fill a bit of a gap in the midfield. So that's good news as well. Averaged 92 last year. I think we both had it, Mark.
Yeah.
When he hit the ton, he certainly scored quite well. I don't think he just scraped over the line. Like Jesse had, I think, 7 or 8 games where he scored 120 plus. But then his low side was very low as well. If he wasn't scoring 120s, he wasn't just hitting the 100s or the 90s, he was into the 60s or 70s, which really sort of limited his upside there.
Yeah, and you would expect that to improve over time. My concerns would be around where to Frio finish on the ladder and his injury. So he has had the foot injury over the summer. He's played an intra-club, which is a brilliant sign, but he definitely has missed a bunch of sessions. So, and that is something that could potentially reoccur. He has had injury issues in the past. There's a fair bit of uncertainty around his role at Fremantle, and there's a fair bit of uncertainty around sort of the roles of the rucks at Fremantle as well. So what the balance is there with the key forwards versus rucks. I think that Ross probably would like to give him a decent amount of midfield time. He's probably one that I wouldn't mind taking a gamble on, because the upside is definitely there, because the upside is actually huge. there's just probably a lot of doubts there as well. And if it was a clear preseason, really good chance that he would make my team.
He's a medium for me, wow. I think. Yeah, he's the key position forward I'm most likely to select. And that's only because I've seen him just come out of an intra-club game. His preseason has not been the preseason you'd ideally like, but just the amount of upside this guy has, I think, worth taking a punt on. Next bloke, again, a trio of key position forwards back to back to back. This one's Jack Darling, who last year was absolutely slaying the first half of the season and then had some injuries and also slowed down. He's scoring a little bit in the second half of the season. I think in champion data, they say he's one of the most inconsistent forwards from a Supercoach scoring perspective. So something to keep in mind there. But interestingly, only the 25th most used target, which surprised me when you consider Kennedy was out for patches and he was so dominant for a patch there. He obviously makes the most of most of the balls that come by his way.
Did you run the average that he would have got without those really, really low games, the injury games?
So if you take out the 14 and the minus one, Jack Darling averaged 96.9.
Okay. That's less than what I thought it would actually be. You'd probably want that to be maybe 105 because he's shown a propensity to potentially have those injury games. Sort of came out of nowhere a bit last year. I know a lot of people did jump on him before his run, but like it only ever averaged sort of 83 before in like eight seasons or something. I think that this could be the new Jack Darling. So I am somewhat tempted with the bit of value in his price at 470. So he did show last year that like if you picked him at the start of the year and you got some of those bigger scores, it would have been pretty nice. It's just about whether he has a run early or whether he has a run late and getting him on him at the right time.
Of the three guys that we've just talked about as value key position forwards, he's the guy that I would think would benefit a fair bit from having more free space because he's just such a big unit. He's so strong one-on-one. He's such a good contested mark. You would think that the guy who benefits more from less congestion and less third man up, third man's up? I don't know. From being intercepted is Jack Darling.
Yep. Out of the three, who would you pick? You're going for Hogan, I'm guessing?
Yeah, Hogan one, Darling two, then probably Riewoldt three.
Wow. I find it really hard to pick between them. I think that Hogan is the one that has the super upside. He's the one that you probably go, oh, wow, he was so obvious. I wish I had picked him and may do that one day. But I'd probably, in this order, I'd probably have Darling, Riewoldt, then Hogan based on where I think that they're at going into the start of the year.
Yeah, look, Hogan could absolutely be a massive trap, especially the preseason he's had. So, you can understand that. Look, we'll move on to a guy who trapped us last year. And I know a few people have brought his name up again. Thankfully, I traded him out early. So I've don't have the same PTSD as you might, Mark. Christian Petrarca.
Do we have to talk about him? It's interesting. I'm not totally sure where I sit. I think that a player like Petrarca is someone that one day will probably be in a lot of Supercoach teams and he's going to pull it all together eventually. He's just so good at contested possessions. And I think that this year might not be the year. I think he might still be even two or three seasons away from really being that player on a consistent basis. The other thing that probably worries me is the depth of Melbourne's midfield and the quality of that midfield. And where Petrarca sits in that. I think in a lot of other teams, he'd probably be a top two or three midfielder and get a lot of minutes in there. But just because of the way Melbourne have recruited, he's probably a bit further down that line. And that means that he'll spend a lot more time up forward. And his scoring is probably a bit limited in that role. So probably have a decent season, show some incremental improvement. I don't see him having a huge breakout to 100 plus this year.
Yeah, agree with that. Seems like a bit of a trap to me. Just not as prolific even when he gets that midfield time. So it feels like the side bottom danger field selection for a few years where they were on the cusp, and people were picking them a few seasons in a row, but it took sort of two or three, four seasons of picking them before they finally broke out. And I'm not sure Petrarca's on that cusp in the same way you are, Mark.
Yeah.
Next bloke, fairly similar to Petrarca, Mark, and that's Jack Billings. Burnt so many last year.
He has the lowest goal accuracy of the top 100 goal kickers over the last 5 years.
And yet he's supposed to be, like, he's a really good field kick. It can be pretty frustrating with Jack. He does seem to really struggle with set shots in particular, and he gets them. But so the idea with Jack is that you'd move him more into the midfield and then he wouldn't have to kick the goal.
Yeah.
I think that the difference between Billings and Petrarca is potentially age and experience. So Billings coming into his sixth year, and that's very often the year where players that have shown a fair bit in the past actually do make a significant improvement. It's that having that 5 or 6 preseasons behind them is when they are actually ready to step up and probably operate as a full-time midfielder a bit more. So I think that makes them a bit different and makes Billings a lot more interesting for me. To me, he's actually a high potential to making my team. Love his value. I did have him last year, but I traded him out after 2 weeks, I think, so I don't have the PTSD that a lot of others would from that. And I should just mention, and I don't mean to be joking about PTSD either. And it's finished the season well again. Did that the year before. Maybe he's just a fast finisher and a slow starter. I'm not sure why that's funny, but I worry a bit about the Saints in general. But yeah, Billings is a real good chance of making my team.
I think something else that makes Billings a different selection is Petrarca's highest Supercoach average was 82 last year, whereas Billings' highest average was the 95 that he got the year before in 2017. So it is something to think about.
And I would realistically, at his price, like 95 to 97, it's not a great return, but it's an okay return. You're not losing much on there.
Feels like a trap to me. Like, really does feel like a trap, but the upside's there.
I love disagreeing. This is good. Come on. I love you calling him a trap, because then I can claim you'll probably pick him anybody, to be honest, but it does allow me to claim some genius.
I'll have him as a low, but it feels trappy. Maybe it's the trauma. All right, next bloke.
Written him off, everybody. Written him off.
Next guy, a Lukey Dalhouse. Talking about low goal accuracy, mate. This guy converted 13% of shots on goal last year. Oh, God.
Hopefully awful. He keeps it going, mate.
Luke Dalhouse, the fresh entrant to the Geelong team. Hopefully the change of atmosphere will change his Supercoach scoring. He was formerly a bloke that we really looked forward to having in our Supercoach sides. He's averaged 104.5, a 99. He's a guy that has definitely got the chops. But on top of his 13% goal accuracy last year, Mark, he also only gained an average of 8.5 meters per disposal.
I think that was like lowest in the AFL, I read.
Poorest of all 134 players who averaged more than 20 disposals last year.
Oh, wow.
So bad. So bad.
Sounds like a good pickup for Geelong. Would you give him a 5-year contract or something?
Thanks. Luckily, it was free.
I think that, so he's had a couple of peaks, but he's played a lot of seasons where he hasn't reached quite those peaks and ended up sort of like a 90 average in a couple of seasons. And I think that that's probably more a realistic expectation for Dalhouse is if he plays 22 games and averages 90 Supercoach, Geelong will probably be super happy with that. And maybe you will as well, Marcus, but I think that you wouldn't be happy with that at all as a Supercoach selection. So given what we've talked about before and Kelly being relevant and Menegola and Hawkins and Selwood and Danger and I'm not sure where Dalhouse fits in with that from a scoring perspective. And I don't see 100 average in him personally, which means that he is, despite his value, a bit of a trap or a low pick for me.
Yeah, he's a low for me. You really want to wait and see how Geelong use him. He can be used as a midfielder, a link-up player. He can be used as a mid-forward. He can be used as a small forward. Where he gets played will largely determine his scoring. Yeah, so I'll wait and see for me. The next and last play that we're going to cover, Mark, is a bloke that I honestly don't know a heap about. I've seen a bit. I know he is a pretty attractive option, but when I look at his percent in the team's preseason team so far, I'm a bit confused. James Warple. I think he's in over 10% of Supercoach teams at the moment. He's priced at like 400K. He's played like less than 10 games or like just over 10 games or something. Jesse Turner, one of our patrons, has asked, what do we need from him to justify a selection at that sort of price bracket? Yeah. I did have a quick look at champion data before I started the podcast so I could learn at least one stat about him. So I've got one stat for you, Mark.
Okay.
He averaged the third most score assists behind Edwards and Dangerfield last year.
Okay.
That's about all I can tell you.
Yeah, and I don't have definitely not in my team. Really liked the look of him last year. Like, I can see why people want to pick him. He at times through those games, he was an absolute gun. Did only get one score over 100 last year. People talking about him being the Mitchell replacement in the Hawthorn midfielder. I'm not sure that that's true with even based on the intercod they played the other day. I think it might have been Morrison and Cousins going through there, getting a fair bit of work as well. I do like him as a player. I think he will improve, but you would want 97 plus from him over the course of a whole year, which is a lot to ask from a second-year player and a 20-year-old. There's not many players in the game at all. Like, you're talking Bennell, Selwood, Pendlebury, Dustin Martin. There's not many players beyond that that actually can average 97 plus in their second year. So I don't think that Warple is likely to fit into that category.
I agree with that. I guess based on my intro, that wasn't a surprise rating for me. All right. That's it, Mark. That actually took quite a while to churn through on the forwards. I guess there's a bit more to discuss than in the midfields where I felt like we were just kind of assigning a player a rating. There were a few more factors we had to consider in the forward line.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up the show for the forwards, mate?
I think my team is still in a bit of a state of flux beyond Dangerfield and Heaney. I do think that they're absolute locks, but positions 3 and 4, I'd hope to have two rookies on field, but positions 3 and 4, there's a lot of different options that could go through there. And I'm probably looking at two players under 500,000 in that spot. And we talked about a lot of them today, and there's doubts over all of them, and there's reasons for that. But just taking a punt on two of those guys, I think, is how you make a lot of progress in this game.
Yep. All right, Mark, thanks for another great show, mate. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in again. If you haven't listened to our first show of the preseason, we did cover the midfield. So make sure you go back and start there. And for anyone considering supporting us on Patreon, please do so at patreon.com/supercoachcoach to check out all the different extras you can get your hands on, including
a bit extra today, mate. We're going to do a little bit more on the forwards.
Yep. We certainly are, and we actually didn't get to quite a bit that we're going to tuck into for the Patreon show. So if you're wondering why didn't we talk about XYZ player, some of it may be in the Patreon show, which might be hopefully a bit of a carrot for those of you who are thinking about it. All right, we'll catch the rest of you next week. See ya.
See ya. Let's get crazy.